Thank you, Jim. So my name is Michael Grant, and I'm pleased to be here to speak on the research that made up my PhD work at Washington State University. So, I know, and so it went too far. Use the arrow. Oh, there we go. All right, so when we speak about, my research is about biofilm. So Susanna talked a lot about fungi in the rhizosphere and the effects that it has on weathering. But there's more going on, and biofilms, bacterial biofilms, are a part of that system. So that's where I did all of my research. And when we speak about biofilms, this slide here is really the hallmark of biofilm development. It begins with an attachment phase where planktonic bacteria, free-living bacteria, find a surface to attach to, and then they form a microcolony. And this is really in two dimensions. It then follows into a growth phase where it's more in the three dimensions, and this is the biofilm itself. And what this is, it's a matrix of polymeric substances that are exuded by the bacteria. These substances include sugars, proteins, DNA, lipids, but it's really species dependent. So they're found everywhere. So if you are so unlucky to look in the mirror and have these teeth, this is you're harvesting biofilms. These are dental caries. It's basically cavities. And it is when bacteria attach to the tooth surface and are allowed to grow. You find them in water treatment centers. So in a lot of studies, you'll hear about sewage sludge. That is really what they're talking about. It attaches to mineral surfaces. And you're also going to find them predominantly in the rhizosphere, and more specifically in forest soils, which is what I studied. So this schematic here shows just that. You have a forest soil. And in the rhizosphere, there are biofilms attached to the minerals. And the reason this is important is because in these soils, there's relatively low fertility, low plant available nutrients. There's a high mineral content. And in the mineral structure, there are the necessary nutrients for the plant. Now, they can break them down slowly, but not to the rate that is really going to help them grow and survive. But with the addition of microorganisms, fungi, and bacteria, and specifically biofilms, they can increase the weathering rates and then populate the matrix with the weathered cations from the mineral, and then the roots can have access to them. So what I wanted to accomplish with this work was to figure out the mechanism of how this happens. How does a biofilm adapt to make this work? And so we used a whole suite of instruments and techniques, including acid digestions, spectroscopic techniques to look inside the biofilm matrix, and microscopic techniques to look at the mineral surface. So in order to begin, we went out to the St. Joe National Forest. We dug up a whole bunch of white pine seedlings and harvested a couple hundred different colonies of culturable bacteria from the rhizosphere of these plants. This is a good place to look because of forest soils have low pH and a high mineral content, such as biotite. And biotite is an aluminous silicate mineral with an abundance of potassium, magnesium, and iron. It is very commonly used in these types of studies. And so we did this and assayed the bacteria that we harvested, and we found a strain of Pseudomonas petita that was found to be an efficient weatherer based on how much iron it mobilized and how acidic it made the filtrate in this weathering assay. This is not surprising that we found a pseudomonad in this environment. They're found abundantly in nature, and especially in the rhizosphere. They have the ability to control other bacteria in this setting. They actually can produce antibiotics. But so it wasn't too much of a surprise that we would find one here, and this is what we found. So we took this bacteria and we grew it in a biofilm drip flow reactor pictured here. So we have the media, which comes in this large 20-liter carboy, it's pumped through the peristaltic pump, and it drips onto the coupons. So the media was either deficient or replete with iron, and we used two coupons, biotite, which is abundant with iron, and glass, which has none. So as you can see, we're focusing here on iron, with and without iron. And the reason is because in pseudomonad biofilm development, shown here, with iron, they have these very nice wild-type colonies. They look like mushrooms, big balloons, whatever you want to call them. But when you remove iron from the equation, you get these very thin, uncharacteristic biofilms that are not how the bacteria would prefer to be. So iron has this key in biofilm formation, it seems like a great place to start. We grew them on the mineral surface in that drip flow reactor shown earlier, and I imaged the surface of the mineral to see if we could actually see any of these weathering changes. We knew that it was happening from the weathering assay, but wanted to actually see it. And in the top two figures, A and B, these are our controls. We prepared the mineral by making a bunch of score marks in it to increase surface roughness and edge size to promote weathering. And as you can see in the two controls where biofilms were not grown, in the top two images, you can see a lot of scattered debris. You can see very sharp edges along these channels. And when you go into images C and D at the bottom, which is after biofilm growth, you can see a lot of this scattered debris is completely missing, and the kind of the edges in these channels have been really softened. We concluded that this was in fact due to the biofilm, that it was dissolving away easy to access particles, and it was softening these edge sites of the channels, which is really where dissolution happens the fastest. Well, if in fact this conclusion is correct, where are the cations going? If it's dissolving this mineral structure, all these cations, they have to be going somewhere. So in order to investigate where that was happening, we used acid digestions to look at the cation concentrations within the matrix of the biofilm after growth. And then we also used high-resolution magic angle spinning NMR to look inside the biofilm matrix. So this box and whisker plot shows the digestion results when we grew the biofilms without iron. And the orange boxes refer to the biotite coupons, the blues refer to the biofilms grown on glass. And these represent cation concentrations of the cations listed on the x-axis. As you can see, when grown on biotite compared to glass, there was a significant increase in each cation tested. What's very interesting is that iron, which was not included in the medium and is not in the glass, was shown to be quite increased, so this must be coming from the mineral. What happens when we added iron to the media? Well, you can see that there was still a significant increase, albeit less, in all three cations tested. So not only is it weathering the mineral, but it does seem that when everything is the way that the bacteria wants, when all nutrients are supplied in full, that there still is some preference for the cations of the surface that it is attached to. But what the most interesting thing from these two, from this results were, if you take the concentrations of the cations in biotite compared to glass per cation, that ratio, it was always greatest when iron was removed from the system. So this means that there is something else going on, that there is some biochemical change happening in the biofilm to make them more, they can increase their adsorption capacity is what we were concluding was happening. And so in order to figure out how the matrix was changing, we went to NMR. Now this is an NMR spectra of the whole biofilm cut in half by the carbohydrate region on the top and the protein lipid region on the bottom. Unfortunately, with NMR, it's very quick. You get a nice snapshot of everything that's going on. But also in this situation, it's very complicated. You can't just point out one peak and say this is one thing and this is something else. But you can take integrated ratios. I should say that the blue line represents biofilms grown on biotite without iron in the medium, and the red line represents biofilms grown on glass, also iron removed from the medium. So we're comparing what happens between biofilms grown on the mineral versus glass. And what we did is we took a ratio of the regions listed, and we see that there really isn't that much of a difference between the carbohydrates and the protein lipid regions. So one of our earlier hypotheses was that if you stress them environmentally, are they going to attach to a surface and adapt because they know somehow that this surface has the nutrients needed? From this data, that doesn't seem to be the case. But when you compared the environment change where iron is missing and is supplied, shown here with the both grown on biotite now, where the green spectra is when iron is supplied in the media and the blue is when iron is removed. This same integrated ratio shows almost twice as much polysaccharide to protein ratio. So it looks as though they're increasing their polysaccharide content, which really does make a lot of sense. So This equation that I've listed is just a showing the same data from the table, the ratio table earlier, showing that the ratio of the cations when they're grown on biotite to glass is always greater. And if, in fact, the polysaccharides are the key, which we think they are based on the NMR data, it would make sense because polysaccharides would be able to increase their adsorption capacity by having increased carboxylic acid functional groups, which are which do exist on these polymers. Very similar to how a soil system works with organic matter. But we wanted to go further than that. We wanted to see exactly what polysaccharide it is, because just saying more polysaccharide, well, it's just not the entire story. And so we did this using confocal microscopy, using conjugated lectins, which are just molecules that fluoresce when they attach to specific polysaccharides. And we were focusing on the sugar alginate. We know pseudomonads produce alginate. They have the ability to do so. And it's a great place to start because, as you can see here, the two subunits on alginate, manuronic and glyuronic acid, both have a carboxylic acid functional group. So not only if they are, in fact, producing more of this, they're not only producing more polysaccharide, but they're increasing their exchange capacity, the concentration of exchange sites. And what we found was this. So to walk you through this diagram, the top three images are the treatment without iron, and the bottom three images have iron, both grown on biotite. In the left, the green is a probe that fluoresces with live cells. The middle is alginate, and then the right side is those overlaid. You can instantly see that the alginate fluorescence intensity is greater when iron was removed from the system. But what was the most interesting was that when we overlaid the two images, so you can see the green is really where the colony is, but you can see this bordering of alginate around the outside, almost like a shell or a capsule that is formed around the outside where cells are not there. So it's not only increasing the alginate, but it's also producing this capsule, this shell of alginate around the outside of the colony. So to conclude this whole story, the nutrient stress can trigger a Pseudomonas petita biofilm to produce more alginate and form an alginate capsule. And to go a step further, it can become a more effective sink for these weathered cations. But if you think that they're weathering the cations in a nutrient-stressed environment like a forest soil, it produces this shell. The cations could potentially migrate out and populate the outside of the shell, which would make it far easier for the plant to access these weathered nutrients. Oh, that's interesting. it would make it far easier for the plant to access these weathered nutrients. Plant roots would not have to go very far into it, into the biofilm to have the nutrients that it needs. And so that's really what we think is happening here, that this stressful environment can have the matrix change in this way to facilitate this process. I would like to thank funding source, the National Science Foundation, everybody who helped me with the analytics in this, my committee, and anybody else I forgot, I apologize, but everybody was important. So yeah, I'd like to open it up for questions. Thank you.
A couple of questions. The first one, did you quantify total microbial biomass on the two systems?
Oh, yes. All cations were normalized to biomass. All of those concentrations were normalized, absolutely.
And did you, in the iron deficient system, and you see the capsule formation?
Sure.
Likely a stress response from the pseudomonas, like the psyllid form.
Right? Yep.
What would happen if you returned iron?
As far as the capsule?
The capsule and then the redistribution of cations.
Well, we never had a treatment in which we grew them without iron, imaged it, and then added iron to see if it would revert back to its state. That would be very interesting to look at, but no, we never did that.
And just considering the flux that occurs
Sure. Mm-hmm. No, that would be a very good follow-up study.
Other questions or comments? There's one for John.
Hopefully, pseudo melanin supposed to be associated with mycorrhizal fungi, and probably able to chemical communication between mycorrhizal fungi and melanin stuff. Have you thought about the role that these bacteria might be playing in interfacing with fungi rather than with roots?
You know, as far as this work, we did not look into the association. We are aware that there are plenty of helper bacteria out there that do associate very closely with the fungi. But these pseudomonads, we didn't go into that at all, no.
There's a new realm of hypostasteria.
Yeah.
Dan.
So your choice of words of capsule and shell are new to me.
Okay.
Suggest some kind of protective. What's in your mind?
Well, so I didn't coin those terms. There had been a study that I found that was with Pseudomonas, I believe it was aeruginosa, and they found an alginate capsule, as they called it. I was also at a conference about a month ago in Chicago, a biofilms conference, and there's a researcher, Matthew Parsek, out of the University of Washington. And he was looking at Pseudomonas aeruginosa and using mutations, genetic mutations, was actually able to turn on a capsule of the polysaccharide PEL, which is a cationic polysaccharide, one of the three big ones that Pseudomonas produce. And he referred to it as a shell. And his confocal images look very, very similar. He actually coined his inflating balloon hypothesis, where as it gets bigger, it produces just that. It's like a protective area. Also, when pseudomonads are found in lung infections and cystic fibrosis patients, it becomes really, really hard for, the prognosis really declines once they form the mucoid, which is producing alginate, which is really where a lot of this research is based on. It's in the medical field. And that does provide them with a great amount of protection from antibiotics, from the host, you know, defenses. And so it's exactly that. I see this as a stress response. I see this as the bacteria trying to protect itself. You know, the bacteria have been around a lot longer than the plants are, and so this process evolved likely for protection, and it is just now, you know, works in this region, it works a little bit different over there, but yeah, protection, I would say.
Okay, we're running out of time. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.